So this study investigates a component of the reproductive ground plan hypothesis. Solitary insect life cycle is used as a framework for social insect division of labor, specifically in the worker caste. So solitary insect behavior is linked to reproductive physiology. It's the reproductive stage that often has a regulatory effect on labor, on behavior in a solitary insect. This regulatory system may underlie social behavior division of, may underlie behavioral division of labor within a social insect worker. Within the honeybee workers are facultatively sterile. They do have ovaries. There's also variation in their ovary size and variation in their behavior. So we looked at the ovary as a regulatory organ for non-reproductive behavior, and the behavior that we looked at was foraging behavior. The high and low pollen hoarding strains are one of the tools that we use to study this. These are European bees that have been bidirectionally selected for differential pollen storage behavior. They've been selected for 32 generations, and we have a high pollen hoarding strain which store incredibly large quantities of pollen, and a low pollen hoarding strain which store very, very little pollen. The high pollen hoarding bees tend to exhibit a behavioral syndrome. In addition to being more likely to store pollen, when they do collect nectar of a lower average sugar concentration, and they tend to forage earlier in life than the low pollen hoarding bees. They also have physiological differences. They demonstrate physiological differences in their ovaries. The ovaries of the high pollen hoarding strain tend to be larger, and they have more ovarials. This is a way we quantify ovary size. We can actually count the filaments within the ovary where the eggs are produced. Africanized bees are another tool that we use in Arizona. We have a lot of them. And Africanized bees tend to have larger ovaries than the European bees. So what we did is we chose bees from these two groups that had ovary extremes. Africanized bees that had the largest ovaries and the European bees with the smallest ovaries. And we did crosses with the intended result of getting highly related colony sources that had high variation in ovarial number. And this is what we resulted in. So these were incredibly closely related colony sources. One of the things that we use to look at foraging behavior is proportion pollen. The way that this is calculated is taking the mass of pollen that was collected by a bee and dividing it by the entire foraging load, the pollen and nectar. In 2006, we did a study, which I presented last year at ESA in a poster, where we took two of these highly related colony sources, and we specifically picked source colonies that had high variation in their ovarials. So one colony source that had a mean ovarial count of around 36 ovarials per bee, and the other had approximately 13 ovarials per bee. And the colony source, which was called R5, which had the larger ovaries, based on the high and low strain bees, we had some expectations of their behavior. We expected them to collect a higher proportion of pollen, which we did see. We expected them to have a lower mean nectar sugar concentration, which we saw, and we expected them to forage earlier in life. We didn't see this result. These bees all forage very early in life, and there was very little spread within their foraging age. In 2007, we decided to redo the study because the results were interesting, they were intriguing, but they weren't conclusive. We wanted to see if we could recreate some of these patterns that we saw in the 2006 study. So we selected two different Africanized strains. Again, they were developed the same way, the Africanized colony sources. Again, we selected colony sources that had variation in ovarial number. There wasn't as much variation this year as the previous year, but there was a significant difference. We looked at foraging initiation age again, and this time we did see a difference in the direction that we expected, with the colony source with the larger ovaries tending to forage earlier than the colony source with the smaller ovaries. When we looked at the proportion load that was pollen, we didn't see a significant difference, and we wanted to think about what factors could be contributing to this, what other factors other than the ovary could be affecting this relationship. nectar load size and pollen load size are not independent of each other. This is from a study done by Pankew and Page, but this has been studied for years, where if you look at pollen load size, the more pollen you're collecting, the less nectar a bee tends to collect, and vice versa, the more nectar a bee tends to collect, the less pollen it collects. In this study, they specifically looked at high and low strain bees, and they saw no significant difference between the slope or intercept of these lines. So there was no difference in the way that the pollen and nectar, or the high and low strain bees, were loading when they were making this pollen versus nectar decision load, or load decision. When you look, when in the same study, they looked at nectar concentration and nectar load size, and there was a relationship between nectar concentration and nectar load size as well. So the more sugar that's in the nectar, the higher the sugar concentration in the nectar, the larger the nectar load size was. And you could then draw the conclusion that the pollen load size is then going to be smaller. It's important to note this flip point between the high and low strain bees. So there actually is an area where if you get into these incredibly high nectar concentrations, you tend to see a flip where the bees, which before we expected to collect more pollen, were actually collecting more nectar. And vice versa, the bees that we expected to collect more nectar were collecting more pollen when you had these high nectar concentrations. And this time, these two lines are significantly different. So the loading in relation to nectar concentration is different between the different lines of bees. In our study, in Arizona, we have very, very high nectar concentrations out in the field. 3/4 of the bees that came back to my that I collected had nectar sugar concentrations that were greater than 60% sugar. So most of my bees could have been up around the flip point for the high for the Africanized strains. I didn't actually calculate that flip point for the Africanized strains. For sucrose responsiveness, there's also a relationship between ovarial number and sucrose responsiveness. Cerruto, Andam, and Page did a study where they saw that bees that had larger ovaries responded to lower concentrations of sugar. So the way the bees are perceiving sugar is related to, it's correlated with the ovary size. So we had several things that could be affecting this decision process between nectar and pollen, which would affect the pollen load, other than ovary, or in addition to the ovary to look at. So we decided to look at the full model. We looked at ovarial number, so a measure of ovary development. We looked at the nectar sugar concentration, and we also looked at the colony source to try to include any other additional factors that we may not have thought of. When we looked at the full model, we saw nectar concentration having an effect on the loading. We also saw ovarials having a significant effect on loading. And we saw this relationship between nectar concentration and ovarials. We did not see a significant effect by colony source, which suggests that we may have a complete model here of the foraging decision. So how does this all tie together? Well, we've shown that there is a relationship between ovaries and foraging behavior. Ovarial number is correlated with sucrose responsiveness, which interacts with nectar sugar concentration to affect loading decision between nectar and pollen, which are not mutually exclusive, which are not independent of each other. So this fits in to create our working hypothesis that ovaries are having a regulatory effect on foraging decision by modulating sucrose responsiveness, which fits into the paradigm of the reproductive ground plan hypothesis with the reproductive organ having an effect on foraging behavior. So there were a lot of people who helped me with this study with data collection and use of various tools, so I just want to thank them and the funding.
We have time for questions.
Yes.
Clarify this for me. You're saying ovarials may be having a regulating effect on foraging.
So the question was asking about juvenile hormone and its relationship to both, I believe you said, ovary development and the foraging decision. The Page and Omdon labs are looking a lot of possible endocrine effects on this system. The ovaries, if they're having an effect, you would expect it to be interacting with the endocrine system, acting as an endocrine organ. They've been looking at vitellogenin as a possible regulator of behavior. Juvenile hormone is something that's being looked at, and the way that these different hormones are interacting with each other. Yes. So the question is, did we look at the nectar concentration out in the field? We looked at the way that we measured nectar concentration is by squeezing the bees in the lab once we collected them at the hive when they were returning from foraging trips. We did not actually go out and do a survey of plants in the field, but it's definitely a good idea.